response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
And now we welcome to Inside the Clubhouse 1980 American League Cy Young Award winner and current White Sox TV analyst, Steve Stone, with Bruce Levine and David Haw on 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Welcome back Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock. And yeah, it's time. It's a joy and a privilege to go to the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas Hotline, home of the world's largest sports book, and that's where we find our guest, Steve Stone. How you been, Stoney?
Well, I've been waiting patiently to see the day when we would or could announce that there's baseball again, and now we can certainly do that. So I think everybody who loves this game, loves the tradition of baseball, understands that it's been interwoven into our society for many years. It's a very happy time for a lot of folks.
And the White Sox are back in camp, and that is where they belong, Steve. And it's so much fun to be able to talk about something other than the competitive balance tax. So as we turn our attention toward Glendale, Arizona, and we see the White Sox returning for a season that Rick Hahn says is committed to, obviously, winning it all in 2022. What's your overall general synopsis of where the Sox are at this point and what they need to do to put themselves in a better position to do just that?
Well, we're going to know a whole lot more when this accelerated free agent acquisition period and perhaps a trade or two period ends. But the Sox are starting out with a whole lot more talent than a lot of other teams. And so if you're starting out there, certainly you don't have as far to go as these other ball clubs that are trying to assemble a great deal of talent. I think anybody who has studied the Sox over the last year specifically will realize there's a couple of things they would like to get. They would certainly like to get a backup catcher. There's a few teams that are looking for those. They would like to get a second baseman. There's a few teams that are looking for those. I think every team would tell you that they'd like to add another pitcher, whether it's in the bullpen or the starting rotation. I think that a lot of people who feel that the Sox really need an outfielder, I don't think they've taken a look at the potential, at least, of what Andrew Vaughn looks like, what Gavin Sheets looks like, what Adam Engel plays like when he's healthy. I think that if you prioritize and the money you're expending, you would think that that would be down the road a bit if you use that at all. I'd like to see the younger guys have an opportunity to see if they can flourish. I think they showed signs last year of being very good at times, and I love the future outlook of Andrew Vaughn. I think that Gavin Sheets can certainly do a whole lot. He gives you a lot of power from the left side. So I think that, along with Adam Engel, who is getting better as a hitter and looks to be able to play defense with anybody in the league, I think we're in pretty good shape outfield-wise, but we'll leave that up to Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams.
Steve, pleasure having you on. First of all, it's a pleasure having baseball back. What a relief it is to talk about the game that we all love. So thank you for joining us. And my question to you is, having pitched in the big leagues for as long as you did and as accomplished as you did, is 24 spring training games, actually 23 spring training days for a pitching staff, enough to get ready to throw 5 or 6 innings once we start playing baseball for the Chicago White Sox on April the 8th in Detroit?
Well, Bruce, look, it's not ideal. And the way I point it out to people is, in a non-strike or non-lockout situation, if it was ideal to have a little less than a month of spring training, then they would have had a little less than a month of spring training. But in those situations where there is no work stoppage, they have 6 weeks of spring training, which I think is ideal for pitchers. And I am hoping, and I think most teams are, one, they're entertaining the idea of a six-man starting rotation. I played golf yesterday with Joe Maddon. The Angels are going to have a six-man starting rotation. I think a lot of teams will go to that. Also, there's a lot of teams that will go to openers. We saw Tampa Bay popularize the opener. I think there's a lot of teams that will go to that. They won't ask pitchers to go deep in their starts to at least start the season. But there's something else that people don't think about very much, and that is what we've talked about over the years, which is the dead arm period that comes to pitchers in spring training. It usually comes about the fourth start or so, and what happens is you just don't have the life in your arm that you normally would have. And if you're in spring training and you go through that dead arm period, which every pitcher does, you're relaxed because it's spring training, and you just throw, and yeah, you don't have the same hop on the fastball, you don't have the same break on the slider or curveball. Nothing really is working for you, but you're in spring training, so you're relaxed. Well, with an accelerated spring training, what's going to happen to a lot of pitchers is they're going to go through that same dead arm period because an arm's an arm. The arm doesn't know about lockouts or strikes or work delays or pushing back or accelerating spring training. The arm is the arm. They're going to go through that dead arm period, only it's going to be in the season. And when it's in the season, you can't really relax. It's different. You push yourself, and I'm afraid that there will be some injuries that wouldn't have come had we had a longer spring training. I understand the economics of the situation. However, I also understand what it takes for a pitcher to get entirely ready for what is, and I think will be, a 162-game schedule. And I fear for the injuries, not only for pitchers, but I fear for some injuries for position players. I don't know how much they were working out. I suspect that these guys were working out at various sites around Florida and Arizona. I think the position players, certainly the hitters, will be ready to go. But when you go back to the cold weather, and we will go back to cold weather, whether it's April 8th or March 31st, it's still going to be cold in the places where the Sox play. I think that that especially guys who run real well, they have to be careful about first-step acceleration. That's going to be a factor. So will we have injuries? Yes, we will. We always have injuries anyway. But I think the accelerated spring lends itself to a few more injuries that we wouldn't otherwise have. And for contending teams, if they have one of their top two or three starters go down, that's going to be a big problem because it's hard to fill that gap.
That's a familiar voice of the great Steve Stone joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Steve, have to ask you about the Carlos Rodon deal. 2 years, $44 million with the Giants. Number one, what was your level of surprise? But secondly, at that price, did it make sense for the White Sox to sit out, or do you think that was an affordable price for the White Sox to try to, you know, bring Carlos Rodon back?
Well, it's a twofold question. I was called by a San Francisco radio station yesterday to comment on that, and I said, no, when I go on the radio, I'm going to go on with a Chicago station first, which is why I'm here and not commenting in San Francisco. But what I said to the guy was very simple. I said, look, Carlos is a wonderful guy, and he is a great competitor, and I wish him only the best. However, with Carlos, in any discussion you ever have, it's can he stay healthy? If you take a look at his history, the answer would be no. When he is healthy, he's as good as anybody around. The first half of last year, he was absolutely unbeatable. I mean, I hadn't seen stuff like that for a long time, since maybe Carlton or Guidry from the left side. It was unhittable. That slider was unbelievable. The fastball was hopping. Everything was great. But as so often happens with him, he had some physical problems last year. They had to shut him down for a bit. That's a great place to pitch. San Francisco might be a terrific place for him, because pitchers excel there, and San Francisco's had a history of bringing in guys who do very well the first year or so, and sometimes they let them go after that. Is it affordable? I don't think the Sox wanted to go $44 million for a couple of years. I believe Scott Boras is his agent. I applaud him for getting what he got for him, and it certainly gives Carlos a chance to be independently wealthy for the foreseeable future. But I don't think it's something, personally, I wouldn't have done that. And I really like Carlos. I respect what he can do. But also, I know that if I devote a roster spot, a spot in my starting rotation to Carlos, I better have somebody to come in and back him up. Now, if he stays healthy for 2 years, It's going to be a wonderful deal for Carlos, certainly, and certainly for the Giants. I suspect that that's not going to happen.
Steve, I'm taking you into the front office with Kenny Williams and with Rick Hahn, the general manager who makes those deals. And I'm sitting you down, and they turn to Steve Stone, and they say, Steve, we have one trade here we can make that's going to make us into a world champion this year, and it's with the Oakland A's. We have our choice of Bassett, Manaea, or Montas in a combination of different deals. Which pitcher does Steve Stone suggest the White Sox make a move on to fill that role and to give them another ace on their staff?
I would say, look, boys, that's a terrific deal, but if you can get Matt Chapman, I think I'd make that deal. However, lacking the Chapman deal and maybe the Olsen deal, I think we're pretty long in first baseman. I think Chapman fits in really well. But when you're talking about the three guys you're talking about, you have to tell me, number one, what I have to give up, because each one of those guys has a different price tag. And you have to also tell me about what does his health look like as far as what injuries he has suffered and everything else that goes into it. Each one of those guys has had their challenges. You might remember we had Montas at one point and decided to move him on. Manaea looks like a terrific pitcher. The most reliable pitcher at this point has been Chris Bassett, but then again, the Sox had him also. So I'm not sure that it's one of those guys that would put the Sox over the top to win a World Series. But of those three, the highest upside is probably Manaea. The most dependable is Bassett. The most electric, if he's on, is Montas. It depends on what you have to give up. And right now, we can't speculate on what you'd have to give up for him. And so, you know, tell me what Oakland wants. And, you know, if Andrew Vaughn is mentioned in any of those deals, I would say don't make the deal.
You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Inside the Clubhouse brought to you by Aloha Restoration, restoring your home to pre-disaster condition. Talking with Steve Stone. And, okay, Stone, Sony, right field is a priority. Andrew Vaughn is versatile. Is he your number one option at right field, or what would your approach be at right field? And then second to that, it also affects what you do at second base.
Well, I think I addressed right field in the opening in that I think a platoon system of Sheets and Vaughn and occasionally Engel, depending on, you know, what kind of defense you want there, I think that would be certainly good enough. I don't think that right field is a priority. Personally, I don't think they can get anybody that doesn't retard the development of Vaughn and Sheets. So I think right field would be down on the list as far as what you'd like. Personally, I'd like to see a top-of-the-line second baseman. I'm not sure if he's out there. But that would be one thing that I would like to get. Also, that backup catcher, I think, is essential. I think it's unrealistic to assume that Grandal is going to catch 130 games. I think he's going to catch far less. And a good backup catcher, a guy that works with the pitching staff well, that can give Grandal a chance to regroup, get healthy, maybe DH, maybe play first base on occasion. I think that's probably a good thing for the Sox to do. I know that's going to be addressed. There's a few teams that are looking for that good backup. The Sox are one of them. But to me, the number one priority would be a top-of-the-line second baseman. You have to have a guy that's going to turn the double play when he has to. I don't think a lot of people realize the responsibilities of a second baseman and how many plays he's involved in. Not only do you have to deal with cutoffs all the time and know where to throw the ball, but you have to cover first base on bunts. You have to do a lot of different things, and you're responsible to do all of those things. It's a position for a very thoughtful guy and a position for an athletic guy. And in the middle of double plays, which you have to turn because you can't give four outs, which is something we did last year too much, I think that becomes a priority for the Sox.
Steve, looking at what you just said and taking it a step further, Tony La Russa in his second year now no longer trying to fit in but trying to get the very best again out of his team. From the comments that you just made, knowing that defense is king and that the White Sox were pretty sloppy when it came to defense, and it showed up pretty late in the season for him. Do you expect a different Tony La Russa to demand a lot more from his team defensively in 2022?
Well, I think Tony would have liked to have the 6 weeks of spring training to be able to work out all of those defensive problems that happened last year, but he's not going to be given that, obviously. Last year was a getting-to-know-you year. I spent a lot of time with Tony in this offseason, not only having some meals, but playing some golf with him and getting a lot of his philosophies. And believe me, nothing really escaped him as far as the defensive deficiencies. He realized that we missed far too many cutoff men. We threw to the wrong base many times. We did not help ourselves defensively, and we did give teams at fourth and fifth out. That will come back to bury you. And Tony understands better than most, this game is won or lost 90 feet at a time. If you take the 90 feet, you wind up winning more times than not. If you give up the 90 feet, you wind up losing more times than not. And that's something that has to be addressed. And again, it's an accelerated spring training. It's not going to be ideal. But now that Tony understands just exactly what his players can do, but more importantly, what they can't do, I believe that this is going to be a better defensive team. I don't think you can sit and watch Eloy Jimenez airmail every cutoff man all season long. I think that's going to be addressed very early in the spring. Eloy has to realize that all he has to do is get it to Tim Anderson if Tim happens to be the cutoff man at that point. You get it to Tim Anderson and your job is done. Eloy, one, does not have a good arm. Two, he is not accurate with it. I think he understands that, hopefully. Everybody else understands that. But Anderson has a good arm, and Tim is accurate most of the time. Get the ball to him. I think that will be addressed early. I think that rundowns is something that, you use three or four or five throws in a rundown, you're not doing it well. I think that'll be addressed. So maybe the workouts will be a little bit longer because they're emphasizing how to play a little bit better defense, but I would hope that the defense is better because that helps the pitching staff and helps the offense because you don't have to score as many runs.
Steve, I love and share your faith in Andrew Vaughn. I also agree that second base is the primary void right now the Sox need to fill. And to help fill that, maybe they can make a trade. And in that context, Craig Kimbrell is somebody that they could dangle and talk to and teams might want. What is the right time to trade Craig Kimbrell? Is it now before everyone, fills their needs and gets to spring training? Or is it later after he gets off to a possibly a good start that you gamble that he will get off on?
Well, it's 10-18 in Chicago.
Yes.
At this point, 10-18, yeah. The right time to trade him is 10-19. If you can get exactly what you want, you can trade him at any time. There's school of thought saying, well, wait till teams are hungrier, wait till teams, really need him. Everybody right now is filling up their team as quickly as possible, and the one thing you want to do is get to a team that needs a closer. Look, I believe that Kimbrel can be a top-of-the-line closer once again. I think it was tough for him last year coming in. With Liam Hendricks, he was the best closer in baseball. When Kimbrel came in, we believed that Kimbrel could complement Liam, but it was not a physical adaptation to that role. It was a psychological adaptation, something that Craig did not do particularly well. But I think if you put him back in the role where he's the man you hand the ball to save the game, I think he can be very good. And I think the Sox would like to move him, quite obviously. They need to get what he would bring in return. It's just the way these things work. You try to hold out for the highest value, but if you do move him, and you don't get exactly what you want, you do free yourself up economically. He's got a pretty big contract for the 1 year. I think they would like to move him. I don't believe they're going to give him away. And unfortunately, in that trade, as you guys saw, Cody Hoyer is going to have arm surgery. That's not a real good thing. It was not a particularly tight motion that he had, and it probably lend itself to an injury down the road. I feel bad for Cody because he's a good kid. The Cubs are going to like Nick Madrigal, but the Sox gave up a lot for Craig, and hopefully they can get something back that can fit into the framework of this team 2022 and help this team win.
Steve, in closing with you, and David and I really appreciate your time as always. Always great hearing you here on The Score and Inside the Clubhouse. When you make the assertion that most teams, and including the White Sox, will probably go with a six-man rotation to start the year, does Ronaldo Lopez become one of the more important and essential guys as far as the beginning of the year goes, anybody on that in that rotation or on that pitching staff, because of the fact that he has experience, he appeared to turn things around last year, and he's versatile?
Well, he also has a really good arm. I mean, you can't leave that out. I think Ronaldo is one of those guys that fits really nicely into a rotation if need be, because he can give you those three innings as an opener. I think Ronaldo, like a lot of pitchers, have some problems, not necessarily the second time through, but occasionally the second time through, and certainly the third time through. So if you're looking at limiting, and you don't have to go to a six-man rotation, I'm just telling you what the Angels are going to do. Some teams will go to a six-man. I really prefer a five-man where you're going a couple of two, three innings to start with, maybe four innings to start with, and go in a five-man rotation, because you're still going to have weather days early in the season. You go in a six-man rotation, you get a weather day or two, suddenly you're pitching every eighth day, and that's not good. I prefer the five-man rotation. I think especially early in the year when you're going to ask pitchers to go a very limited amount of innings when they open the ballgame, I think it works out very well, that and the natural off days and the weather off days. I think five men are fine. I think Ronaldo fits in very nicely in a limited role that the Sox are going to do, and give him an opportunity to maybe take that next step. The Sox have always loved his arm. There's no doubt about that. If they can get him to learn a little finesse to go with that power, they've got themselves a pretty dependable pitcher. But he's got to show that he can get the ball over. And when the stuff isn't great, he's got to show that he can get hitters out. That comes with change of speeds and location and a number of other things. It comes from moving from the thrower to the pitcher. And Ronaldo was in the process of doing that last year. He had some very, very good moments last year.
Steve, thank you so much for your time and your insight, and it's just great to hear you talk about the White Sox. Have a great day.
Well, boys, baseball's back. Nobody is happier than I am, and I think all Sox fans look forward to a very exciting year, and let's get to it.
Steve Stone right here on Inside the Clubhouse. It was great to hear him talk about where the Sox need to move next, Bruce, and the Kimbrel stuff. We have a lot to discuss moving forward. We have Chicago Bound coming up next. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
I'm going to tell you something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm going to stay in this town. I'm going to live in this town. I'm going to live in Chicago. It's the greatest place around.
What new star players may be joining the Cubs and White Sox in 2022? David and Bruce explore the free agent and trade market as the offseason takes shape. Will it be Carlos Correa hitting long balls at Clark and Addison? You and the guys discuss possible offseason MLB moves and speculate who may be Chicago bound at 312-644-6767 on Inside the Clubhouse.
David Hall, Bruce Levine here for another couple segments. Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's our favorite segment on this show. We can bring it back and mean it this time, Bruce, because there's a ton of speculation. There's a ton of movement in Major League Baseball. This is the time to strike. This is the time where it makes sense to wonder, where is Carlos Correa going to end up? As of this morning, we still don't know. The Cubs signed, you know, a shortstop that doesn't necessarily preclude them from getting involved still with Carlos Correa. What do you think? How likely? What's going to happen next, Bruce?
Yeah, look, Andrelton Simmons is a stealth move by the Chicago Cubs. It gives them protection for the 162-game season at short with a professional shortstop, as Coombs pointed out, a guy that can get it done. More importantly, it protects them from leveraging, from being leveraged out if they're still in the hunt for Carlos Correa. So when they sit down with Scott Boras over the next few days, and certainly it's going to heat up here for Correa and his free agency with just a very small number of teams. David, how many teams can afford 7 to 10 years at $32 to $35 million a year? That's going to be the asking price. So it was a stealth move by the Cubs. Very good move, but it doesn't preclude them. $4 million is chump change in the big picture here when you're talking about likely setting yourself up at shortstop for the next 7 years with a guy like Correa.
$400 million? Oh, $4 million.
$4 million
is.
Sorry.
How about $350 million? How likely do you see the Ricketts family wanting to or being willing to invest that kind of money? And Bruce, do you see the connection between the other news this week or last week about the Ricketts family, you know, considering or being on a list of potential buyers for Chelsea's football club at a $4 billion price tag? And you know, if they're healthy enough financially to consider that expenditure, you have to be able to go out and do what's best for your baseball team that you do own.
I don't see it, David, because one business supports that business, another business supports that business. It's totally different revenues, totally different LLC. It's apples and oranges. It doesn't really. You're going to go spend some other family's money because they have an entity that owns a baseball team and wants to make another capital venture out there. I don't see the analogy at all. That since they have, we already know they have billions of dollars. That's not a question. The question is, do they run their business like a business, or they run it at the behest of fans and media people, and also. Do they, you know, bring back Phil Wrigley to run the team? Just let people do whatever they want and show up. I honestly don't see the analogy whatsoever.
Well, fair enough, but Bruce, I think that we live in a world that perception often, you know, dictates reality, or there's a tight connection between the two, and the optics of having, you know, an ownership group that Tom Ricketts is famously known for saying that during the pandemic there were biblical losses. And we know how major league owners have, you know, complained about how difficult it is to make a living, to make a profit. They don't open their books, so we don't know that. So I think the optics of having that portrayal of Tom Ricketts versus this idea that they are now going to, you know, be among the bidders for Chelsea, that to me was bad timing at best. It was, and at worst,
I get that. I mean, it's in the, first of all, it's during a lockout, right?
Right.
So that, you know, that type of, well, why aren't you concentrating with the other owners and getting us back out there and getting our game back? So I understand what you're saying about the optics, but honestly, I'm my job is not to defend Tom Ricketts. My job is to be objective about what's out there. I just don't see. We all know that family has billions of dollars, and you know, they have made. Would you say they've made some really good investments by investing $855 million in the Cubs? That's now worth about $3 to $4 billion. I'd say they've made some good investments. You know what? Why stop there? During this last 5 years, my investment guy has increased my portfolio for stocks and bonds. I've made more money. I've invested more with them. I mean, I don't compare myself to Tom Ricketts and his family, but it's the same. It's the same avenue. You know, we're a capitalistic society, a democracy. We're proud of it, and God love him. Let him and his family go buy and enjoy owning Chelsea.
Bruce, the Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That's where we find Larry in Canton. Larry, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, guys, I got a question for you. If the owners would not have locked out the players, they'd have opened it up and said, come on in, do your training, spring training camps are open, and we'll negotiate all the way through until opening day. And if we haven't got an agreement, then we'll go under the old agreement. And then that'd have been on the players, either accept it or go on strike. Then that'd turn public opinion against the players. Is that correct?
They couldn't necessarily just say we go by the old agreement. That expired. What they could do is they could say there's an impasse and then probably establish their own new rules, and then it would be up to the players to strike. So that's how it would go.
Thanks for the phone call. I think that is probably well explained, Bruce. Let's try George, who is in River Grove. George, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Gentlemen, how are you today?
Great.
So one day I look up, and the last thing I hear on the sports stations is that there is an impasse and there's not much going on. And then I look up, and there's Dick Durbin. And Dick Durbin says, you guys better straighten up or I'm going to haul your ass in front of a congressional hearing and ask why you deserve to have this antitrust action. And the next day there's a contract. Can you connect the dots on that?
I got it. It's the power of the score. He was on the score and he made those comments and they were very strong. No, all kidding aside, it doesn't hurt when government people come out and say, you know, get your act together. The antitrust, situation has always been there. It's been a wink and a pass by Congress all the way through for baseball since the early 1920s. It is a monopoly. But keep in mind one thing, and David, this is important to understand. If they took this away from baseball, that would make all the players free agents, okay? The rules would be gone. They could be free agents every year. That would be the worst thing that ever happened to baseball players and their union, because when you flood the market every year with guys that can go from team to team, it's chaos, and it's also lowers after the top players sign. Everybody else scrambles to get a job, much like we're watching right now with this late agreement and 100 free agents out there. That's the last thing the players actually want.
We were privileged to have Senator Durbin on the Mullen Haw Show on Thursday morning. I don't know if there's cause and effect, Bruce. I think that obviously he amplified his concerns about the antitrust exemption that were expressed the previous evening on Twitter. So social media, mainstream media, this is a politician who understands how to communicate a message loudly and clearly. And I think Major League Baseball received it. Now, I don't know if that affected the end of the lockout or not, but hey, we can promote it that way because you know what? There was Dick Durbin on our show in the morning and there was an agreement by dinner. So I'll give Molly credit for that one. How about that?
I think it's great, and I don't think it hurt at all when it came to the fact that players and owners knew they had to get back there. But realistically, this system, although it's always been weighed toward ownership, is much, much better than any out there in sports. It's the best union in the United States. The benefits are the very best for retirement, for players, as far as medical goes. This is a fantastic union. By taking away the antitrust, it would totally destroy the union and what it represents as well.
Bruce, we've got another segment. When we come back, I want to ask you about the White Sox and something that Steve Stone touched on in terms of their needs and their priorities as they chase a World Series here in 2022. Inside the Clubhouse, another segment. David Haw, Bruce Levine here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I don't think any of us would be doing our jobs properly. And by that, I mean the front office, players, coaches, if our aspirations weren't to win a championship. And we need to do everything in our power to win the World Series in 2022.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine for a final segment. That was Rick Hahn talking yesterday in Glendale, Arizona about this season. World Series aspirations for the White Sox, Bruce. We talked to Steve Stone. Wanted to get your thoughts on his feeling that, number one, they should trade Craig Kimbrel sooner rather than later, like immediately. And then the faith he placed in Andrew Vaughn, leaving second base as a number one priority. Is that the first move that Rick Hahn makes to try to supplement this roster?
Well, I like the idea of getting worth for Kimbrel. You know, there's a $16 million anvil tied around his neck. Now, he's going to be well worth it if he pitches up to the type of pitcher he was back the beginning of last year when he was the best closer in the National League for the first 4 months. Not so much the setup man that he was for the White Sox last year, but that's the gamble out there. But there's a lot of moves being made right as we speak. Steve Cishek signed a major league contract, former Cub and White Sox pitcher. Trade between the Twins and the Rangers. Mitch Garver, a catcher, traded to Texas for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, a shortstop, to fill the gap with Minnesota over there. We're going to see, I don't know, 50, 75, 100 transactions here over the next few days. So it's going to be a mind-bending time for Major League Baseball. And it's, as Rick Hahn said yesterday, it's kind of like spring training and the winter meetings all wrapped into one, because you have all these moving parts and you have to see and get your players out on the field for the first time on March the 12th today. Is that what it is?
Yes, it is.
When normally they've been in camp for over a month. So it's going to be a never ending turnstile of events coming on here over the next few days.
Inside the Clubhouse brought to you by Aloha Restoration, restoring your home to pre-disaster conditions. Let's squeeze in a phone call. Steve is in Elmhurst. Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse, Steve.
Yeah, good morning, guys. You know, I saw where Major League Baseball and the Players Association had come to an agreement that there were going to be some changes in baseball, including slightly larger bases. They're like, two inches in, width and length, and, you know, they're square, so it's the same. But and then also they're going to do away with shifts. They're going to ban the shifts, and then the pitch clock. But I also saw that these changes were not going to be implemented till 2023. And I could understand if it was an automated strike zone or something where you need to put in equipment and everything. But what is the reasoning for delaying the implementation of these rule changes?
Bruce? It's no good. It's no good. I'm with you 100%. There are changes that are going to help the game. The game has to improve its pace. One way to do it is implementing that clock right away. David, right away. There's no reason to wait. The players wanted the time to be able to get used to this. You don't need a year to get used to it, okay? You're not going to like it next year any more than you like it this year. So I see no purpose whatsoever in waiting. Nonetheless, the players want this to wait a year, so we'll wait. But improvements need to be made for the fans' appreciation of the game and enjoyment right now, not a year from now. So I'm with you on that call. Thanks for it. And
Bruce,
by the way,
David,
I just want to say congrats to Les Grobstein's family, his longtime partner Kathy, and Les Grobstein Day yesterday in Chicago declared by the mayor, and the great bobblehead that's being put out with Les out there. It's a fantastic thing for a fantastic friend. So
it really is. And what a tribute and what a legacy that he left behind. And he would be so happy that on that day we were celebrating baseball, the game that he loved and obviously for so many years. And Bruce, we're going to love, you know, paying attention to the Sox and Cubs to see who makes the first big move and how this all unfolds. And by the time I'm on the air Friday or Monday morning with Mully and Haw at 5 o'clock, I think we're going to have something big to talk about. But we have some people we want to thank.
We do. We want to thank Ron Coomer, the great color commentator on Cubs baseball and The Score. Also, Steve Stone, who does a fantastic job in NBC Sports Chicago, along with Jason Benetti calling all the White Sox games. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Also on our website at 670thescore.com, writing Cubs and Sox. I will talk to you next week from lovely Arizona. Take care, my friend.
Looking forward to that, Bruce. Bulls basketball, 6:45 tonight on The Score. Adam Studzinski, thank you for your contributions to the show. Studs and Rosie next until 2 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.